Radio Free Press, a podcast from the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, campaigning for free, independent and accountable media.
After the great build-up to the publication of the Leveson Report and then a day of great drama at Westminster, all eyes are now on the newspaper proprietors. Can they deliver on the ultimatum made by the Prime Minister that unless they work out and accept the introduction of an independent regulator of the press, then the government might have to intervene and perhaps Parliament would have to be asked to pass legislation to enforce effective standards, which is precisely what Lord Justice Leveson himself proposed. Now, the devil is going to be in the detail, and it could be some weeks before the owners and editors reveal whether their promised new blueprint does honour the Leveson recommendations. Here to discuss where we go next are a university media professor, the leader of the Journalists' Union, and the new head of the British Trade Union Movement. Francis O'Grady, you're just about to take over as General Secretary of the Trades Union Congress, and one cannot forget how trade union leaders in the 1980s were harassed and trashed by the newspapers of their day, conduct not too dissimilar to the hounding that some people have complained about now. What do you think as TUC General Secretary? Do you trust the newspaper proprietors to deliver?
The first thing I should say is that we represent 6 million members, but we have a bigger interest in a genuinely free, robust press, but we can't go round the track again of seeing a stitch-up by the owners that doesn't recognise what everybody else is saying, including the unions that represent workers in the media, that we need a strong, independent body to put the picture right.
Now, if the owners then and the editors don't deliver, where do you think the union movement stands on Leveson's very clear recommendation that press regulation should be backed by the authority of Parliament and that without that it won't be a long-term solution?
Well, I think that's right. We're backing our media unions who are calling for support for Leveson's recommendation on a strong independent body which is underpinned and has real powers to hold what otherwise we fear can be overmighty press barons in some quarters to account.
And do you agree with my point that the union movement itself would like better understanding from the newspapers and that in the past the tabloids have pretty well trashed some union leaders?
Well, there have been good examples too. I mean, The Mirror, for example, I think has run a very good campaign on issues like bogus self-employment in the construction industry to the issue of austerity and cuts. So there are high standards of journalism too. But we've also had too many union leaders who themselves personally have been subject to press intrusion, not least when they're leading democratically decided strike action. So of course we have an interest in stopping that kind of unacceptable behaviour.
Now, Michelle Stanistreet, General Secretary of the National Union of Journalists, you've been on the case for some months. You gave very powerful testimony to the inquiry, which the judge himself remarked upon. Do you think it's right that the owners and the editors should get this second chance in the last chance saloon?
We absolutely don't think that there should be another last chance saloon moment. I think there's something pretty unedifying about a bunch of editors getting together over bacon, sarnies and lattes to decide between themselves what this new body should look like. I think the principles that they're supposed to be now considering is about how to create a genuinely independent body. And frankly, I think they've ceded their right to have any say or stake in what that new body should look like. So I think it would have been better and would have looked like it was the creation of a more independent body if it actually was an inclusive process that included all the other people that have got a stake in a healthy, robust, free but accountable press, and that would include the journalists through the NUJ, but it would also include kind of the broader public. And I think whatever this new body is, when it comes into being, it's going to have a really difficult and challenging task about creating and improving trust, public trust in the press. And I think it would have been much better if this process had started as a genuinely open, transparent, inclusive process. And I think they've missed a trick here. So I do have quite a deep scepticism about what we're going to see come on the back of this, because obviously they're trying to come up with a solution that's as much akin to the status quo as they can possibly get away with. So it's never going to be the solution that we'd all really genuinely love to see, those of us who care about the press.
But Michelle Stanistreet, what of the fact that your union, the NUJ, has achieved something which you've campaigned for so long, a conscience clause? The editors now seem to be prepared to accept that. That would mean that a journalist wouldn't be forced to do something like phone hacking if they thought it was questionable or unlawful.
Well, it was brilliant for us that Leveson recommended this amongst the many recommendations in his report. And you're right, we've been campaigning for this for years and years. And the industry, the editors, the Society of Editors, the owners, they've refused to implement this on so many occasions, even when a Home Affairs Select Committee recommended a conscience clause back in 2003. So they've always opposed this. It is positive that they're looking at introducing this. However, I think the devil's in the detail, and if you look at some of the reports emerging from what the editors have agreed on the back of their breakfast together yesterday morning, then actually they're looking at the consideration of bringing in the conscience clause. And so I very much doubt that they're going to implement it in the kind of way that the NUJ wants and that Leveson was suggesting. So again, I think we need to treat this with a degree of caution.
Now, Julian Petley, you're the co-chair of the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom. You're a professor of media studies at Brunel University. And there's no doubt the publication of the Leveson report was an historic moment. It's laid out changes for press regulation that you and other campaigners have been arguing for years. We've just heard from Michelle Stanistreet of the NUJ of her reservations. Do you think, from your perspective, campaign perspective, that the editors and the owners should get this chance?
No, certainly not. I mean, they should have a chance, obviously, but a chance with many other people, with NGOs, with unions, and with just ordinary members of the public, and dare I say it, academics as well. But what's going on now looks to be a complete stitch-up. I mean, it was extraordinarily revealing when the editors met with David Cameron. And we saw them on the news suddenly kind of emerge, blinking from the front door of number 10, like some kind of night creatures which had suddenly been exposed very unwillingly to the light. And when Channel 4 News actually showed this, they actually played the music from The Godfather over it. And this tells you everything you need to know, in my opinion, about the people who own and run the British press. Also, by the way, it was very, very revealing that when Hugh Grant made his Channel 4 programme about the whole campaign that led to Leveson, he found it incredibly, extraordinarily difficult to get any representative of the British press to appear on that programme. And as somebody who's been a member of the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom for more years than I care to remember, this just reminded me of all the difficulties that we have every time that we organise conferences and meetings. We try to get people along from the British press, that is the parts of the British press which are the main offenders, the offenders against the journalistic standards, and we can never get them. The only journalist that I can think of from the kind of newspapers that cause all the problems who will occasionally speak about these issues is Peter Hitchens. But you try and get anybody else to speak about this from the British press, they are completely and absolutely unaccountable. They demand that everybody else is accountable, but the very last thing they want themselves is accountability.
Now, Francis O'Grady, if I could turn back to you. Clearly, there could be a political struggle over this in the new year. The Labour leader, Ed Miliband, has thrown down the gauntlet, making it quite clear that members of Parliament reserve the right to bring in a bill to create a press regulator by law. Where does the union movement stand, do you think? If it actually came to that, would you end up by supporting the opposition party, the Labour Party, and perhaps the Liberal Democrats if they break away from the Conservatives on this issue? How deep would be the feelings within the union movement?
I think the feeling is very strong, but I think the ultimate test for politicians of any party is the public going to have confidence in this process? If somebody takes a complaint, is that process going to be fair and transparent? And are they going to feel that they get a proper redress, some justice at the end of it? And I think the political class needs to be very mindful that the public has now seen what's been going on. They've seen it laid bare. I think the public understand that it's not just about individuals, it's also about the way that ownership in the industry has become so concentrated. And I think increasingly they understand the important role that unions can play in working from the inside of the newsroom and making sure that there's a culture there where individual journalists don't feel bullied into unethical behaviour, but do have the conscience clause that Michelle was talking about before, and do have some real backup from an independent membership organisation like a union from within. But it's the public that the politicians have to convince, not just newspaper editors and owners.
Michelle Stanistreet, where does the National Union of Journalists stand if it does come to a political ding-dong? I mean, has your union actually made any overtures to the Labour Party or to the Liberal Democrats in preparation for such an outcome?
Oh, we've been doing lots of lobbying and having meetings with all manner of kind of politicians over recent weeks, and particularly in the last few days. So we've just in the last few days, I had a meeting yesterday with the Secretary of State. We met with the Deputy Prime Minister earlier this week, and it's a complete political hot potato, this, and there are clear divisions. And it's going to be very interesting, because what's obvious, and Maria Miller accepted this yesterday, that if it comes to a vote in Parliament, the Tories would lose on their position. There is real cross-party consensus that there needs to be genuine change, and that means a new independent body that bears no relationship to the PCC of the past. So, yes, there will be a political battle. I think the problem now is going to be the fact that the editors have come up with something that they are going to try and portray. And of course, they have the power and the spaces in their own papers to be able to put this argument very vociferously. They're going to be making out that they have come up with a solution that's Leveson compliant. And it's going to be difficult from then on to see, and interesting to see how the politicians are going to react to that, because then we're going to be talking around the edges of some of Leveson's recommendations, and whether or not there's the political will then for them to drive through any underpinning or any other potential backstop for a new regulator remains to be seen.
Julian Petley, could I turn to you now from the activists and the campaigning point of view? We know that Hacked Off, that has supported victims, has got a petition going, well over 100,000 signatures. Do you think that the campaigners, there's the Media Reform Group, the CPBF, do you think you're up for the fight, and that if it does come to a political struggle, this campaign is really going to continue?
Well, I mean, we're certainly up to the fight. There's no question about that. The question is how we're going to conduct the fight. The whole problem with these things, as we've seen, is they have a tendency to vanish behind closed doors, you know, either the closed doors of Parliament or even more closed doors of the newspaper owners and editors and managers. So I think that the fight is really going to be on two fronts. One is to keep the public very much on board. I mean, clearly at the moment, about 80% of the public support the whole Leveson package. The problem is going to be when the newspaper owners come up with some kind of arrangement which they're going to pass off as being more or less Leveson, but without the statute. As Michelle has said, the problem is that, you know, the press has got the megaphone here, and they are going to represent their proposal in the best possible light. I would say they're going to probably completely misrepresent their proposal in the same disgraceful way that they have misrepresented a good deal of what Leveson has actually said.
Now, if we look at that, Julian Petley, if we look at some of the detailed issues, and I'll take one up with Michelle in a moment, I mean, the area where you were particularly concerned was the question of newspaper ownership. Now, do you feel that Leveson actually delivered on that? Because, of course, that would get to the very heart of the point you've just been making about the media's owning the megaphone.
No, I don't think Leveson really did and does come to grips with the question of ownership. I mean, this campaign, all along, all throughout its entire existence, stressed the importance of ownership. You can't just look at, you know, what's wrong with press coverage of this, that or the other without looking to see why the coverage is the way it is. And it is the way it is because of who owns the newspapers. It really is that simple, in my opinion. So ownership is extremely important, but I can't see, I have to say, any of the main political parties really grasping the nettle of ownership. It goes against so many of their, you know, more or less neoliberal economic principles, and also, as we can see full well, they're terrified of alienating the newspaper-owning class.
Can we take up an issue specifically relating to journalists, Michelle? As a journalist, I know that there is concern about what Lord Leveson has proposed regarding data protection, as to whether or not there should be new curbs on the freedom of journalists to collect information which might otherwise involve them in a breach of the data protection. There's also concern about whether or not there are going to be off-the-record briefings from police officers. Now, in certain circumstances, those are very important. How do you explain the NUJ's position on some of these issues? Because they are seen, they are issues which are being exploited, of course, by the owners as reasons why they can't accept the whole of the Leveson package.
Well, the NUJ is quite clearly backing Leveson's recommendations on the establishment of a new independent body, but we have real reservations and would oppose some of his recommendations, specifically the ones you mention about changes on data protection, extension of PACE, the comments on off-the-record briefings. And we think it could be a case of with good intentions, because we can see why he's come to some of these answers to the problems that he's heard about throughout the course of this inquiry, but we think we might be in a position where if those changes took place, they would actually make the life of good quality investigative journalism harder. And so we have real reservations about that. We're doing some more work on this as we speak to be able to put out a fuller briefing. So there are aspects of his report that, as things stand, we certainly do not agree with and we would not support. But I think the focus right now and the real immediate issue is about the establishment of a new body, and that should be what we concentrate our attention on, because things are moving very swiftly. There are meetings happening on an hourly basis. The editors have been in joint meetings and meetings with ministers every day this week, and they are set on rushing something through that suits them, but that will shortchange the public. And it's absolutely right to say, as Julian said, that they have the megaphone and they will be able to portray this as a reasonable compliance solution in the pages of their own newspapers. And we saw what happened in the run-up to Leveson's report and the announcements. It became ridiculously hysterical. The coverage in the newspapers was outrageous. I mean, it completely misrepresented what was about to happen. People who oppose their own position were attacked remorselessly, and I speak to you as the most dangerous trade union leader in Britain, according to the Sun newspaper. So the NUJ came in for a huge amount of attacks and misrepresentations in the pages of several of our national newspapers.
If we look at that specific point, of course, I mean, the Daily Mail suggested that the judge is going to turn Britain back 300 years to the days of a licensed press, to a new dark age. I mean, it was quite vociferous, wasn't it? This, of course, is the work of something called the Free Speech Network, which is the owner's front organisation. Francis O'Grady, you've seen campaigns like this before by employers and owners' organisations. What was your take on the way in which the newspaper owners and proprietors were prepared to fight their corner? And as Julian Petley has just said, seem pretty determined, and Michelle has said, pretty determined to go on using their megaphones.
Well, I think they made our case for us, really, didn't they? The trade union movement's position is very clear. Nobody wants to see state interference in the freedom of the press, but we think an equal threat is interference by overmighty owners. And clearly, that kind of concentration of ownership does have an impact on what people read in their newspapers at the end of the day. And I think there are some important principles here. I mean, a strong free press and a responsible press is essential to our democracy. We want powerful elites to be held to account. We want to see high standards of investigative journalism. We want to see journalists trusted. But I really think that it would be a huge mistake by both politicians and the industry to try and engineer a kind of stitch-up, because I think that the public and indeed their readers just won't buy it. The cat's out of the bag. We need clear action. We need a strong independent body, and we need it now.
Well, let me give the final word to Julian Petley. You must have, as an observer of the scene, must have looked at with interest the work of the Free Speech Network and this suggestion that, you know, there are dictators around the world who are going to follow Lord Leveson's example. What do you think of the preemptive propaganda strike by the employers,
the owners? Well, what I think is that the word freedom or the words press freedom have been totally just trashed and traduced and dragged through the mire, quite frankly. I've never heard so much self-interested nonsense spouted in all my life. I mean, the only papers which have remotely covered the run-up to Leveson and the Leveson report fairly would be The Guardian, The Independent and The Financial Times. The Telegraph has been absolutely shocking, an appalling example of bad journalism, and the other tabloids, it is like a tabloid, the tabloids have been absolutely, predictably ghastly as well. You know, the coverage of the Leveson and the run-up to Leveson shows so incredibly clearly why some form of press reform is actually needed. You know, accuracy has gone completely out of the window. Fact has been mixed up with fiction, mixed up with comment. It's an absolutely appalling situation. How people are supposed to judge these things properly, I don't know. I think it's an enormous tribute, by the way, to the intelligence of most of the British public, that 80% of them think that Leveson should be enacted, in spite of the fact that they must have been reading trash and tripe in their newspapers. So the public can be trusted here. It's the newspapers that can't be trusted.
Well, we're going to have to watch this space very clearly because, as Michelle Stanistreet from the NUJ has explained, this is something on which a lot of backroom manoeuvring is going on. But first, let me thank Julian Petley, Michelle Stanistreet and Francis O'Grady for taking part. This podcast was recorded and produced by Claire Colley for the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom.